This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. Good to see you. Good to have you here. Got my buddy Andy Bizzub with me. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Carm.
Damn. Midwest Performance Cars, Chicago, Northbrook, Westmont, Illinois, Euro Shop.
Yep.
Great friend. He works part-time in Texas, and the shop's up in Chicago. I mean, there's someone to admire. And hey, so how the hell are you doing it?
Well, that's why we're here, right?
You got it figured out, baby. We're the gold standard of automotive service aftermarket podcast. Glad to have you here. Listen, if you're on our subscriptions, like us, if there's a chance to give us a review, please give us a 5-star. We'd sure appreciate that. And we appreciate your incredible loyalty to the show. And hopefully you are doing what we expect you to, and that is to learn something new with each episode, do something with it to confirm or clarify that you're on track doing the right things. Your shop's future is in your hands. Accomplish more by starting now. That's the motto of Repair Shop of Tomorrow. A Napa Auto Care exclusively endorsed vendor, RSOT, is helping shops all over the nation run a more profitable business by utilizing best practice marketing and coaching. Interested in Repair Shop of Tomorrow? Call 440-545-1230 for a free 20-minute, no obligation, consultation. Andy and I are close enough that he calls me or he writes me and he says, read this book. So this book was written in 2003. I'm going to hold the book up, Driving Force, Extraordinary Results with Ordinary People from Peter Schutz, the former CEO of Porsche AG. And he worked for Cummins. I mean, this guy's got a terrific career and he tells some incredible stories of leadership and empowering people. So Andy sent it to me, and Andy, I don't know if you got this, but I want to show you something. When I got this book, there was a signature in the front.
Yeah.
Did you have that too?
No. So when I found this book, I went to a Porsche Club event last year. His daughter, Lori, unfortunately, Peter is no longer with us. His daughter, Lori, gave a presentation about her dad, about his career with Porsche, and then she talked about the book. She was selling copies of the book, so I bought a copy. Brandon, one of my co-owners and our head technician, he bought a copy as well. And the week after that event, we walked in the office. And I was talking to Brandon. I said, hey, did you happen to read the book? And he was like, his eyes lit up and he was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe all the great stuff in there. And I was like, exactly. This is seriously one of the best business books I've ever read. It's a great storybook. I mean, it has great vignettes from his life and his career, but the business aspect of it is incredible, because the points come through, the leadership and all the good business practices points come through the telling of a really interesting story.
I couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that I have finished it. I'm a third of the way through it, because I seem to find the time when I travel. This was my vision book on a trip to Atlanta recently. Everybody knows, and I've told the story of how I take notes in a book, you know, in that front cover. I don't know if you can see it. But I scribble notes, and what was driving me crazy is I was scribbling a note and I say, that's too important to leave in the book. So I wrote it there. And then I took one of my famous scrap papers that I travel with and I started to take notes. And I walked away from first third of the book with 5 or 6 little scrap papers that I would like to either do in my life, do in my business, or to try to figure out how we can build some stories around some of the principles in the books, you know, by having episodes. And that's what ultimately drives what we do here. We hear about things that we need to talk about so that people can take advantage of the passion that we have to make all of us better businessmen, better leaders, better spouses. So thank you for this. I believe wholeheartedly that this will become one of my most favorite business books. So that's what we're here to talk about. But look, let me tell you a little bit about Andy. He's done so many great episodes with us, and I just want to highlight a few. If you ever want to get more of Andy Bizzub, just go to our website, type in A-N-D-Y. That's all you have to do. There's another guy named Andy, but B-I-Z-U-B, Andy Bizzub, Technician's 3-Year Succession Plan, which was a great episode talking about your guys. Unpacking the Dynamics of Consumer Choice and Pricing, that was a great episode because you're a brainiac when it comes to that. Advantages and Challenges of Artificial Intelligence in the Automotive Industry. That was a great panel discussion we had. Start Monday positive and celebrate Friday. And I think one of the best ones ever was Drop the Keys and Fix It. That's what we titled it. It's frankly what every shop owner, I think, always wants to have happen with their high quality clients.
Yeah. And there's a part in this book about quality clients. Exactly that topic. When I started reading it, in the evening, laying in bed before I was going to go to bed. And I figured, you know, I'm going to read a little bit. It'll make me sleepy. My wife, then she saw me after about 10 minutes, jump out of bed and run downstairs to go get my Post-it notes because I was like, I can't leave these things in the book because I'm going to have to go back and read the whole thing over again. So I just started hitting the Post-it notes on these just gems that I could immediately apply to my business.
Well, thank you for wanting to do this book report. I'm only one third of the way. I can't wait to hear your perspective. And this is really what this is. It's a leadership opportunity for Andy to give us the review of the book. So let's start.
I highlighted to you a few points to hit on that we could just kind of flesh them out. The first one, the first note that I put down here was under a piece of the book called Preserving the Culture. And we all know how important culture is in our business, right? It's a primary importance in my operations at my shops, our shops, because now I have three co-owners in the business. But just as a caveat, everybody can mess this up, ourselves included, because we just went through an episode where we had to let someone go who was really toxifying our culture. Just happened. And we let it go longer than we should have, but we did eventually just bite the bullet and do the right thing. But everybody, it doesn't matter how well run your shop is, what kind of operation you have, we're not perfect. And you can stumble on this. And we just did. So just again, a little bit of background, Peter Schutz, he was the CEO of Porsche from 1980 to 1987. He was brought in when Porsche was really, they had really lost their mojo. The 911, their famous, and you know, the iconic car was slated to go away. Morale at the company was in the cellar. They had not been winning at racing. There was nothing going well for the company. They brought Peter Schutz in. He was an engineer at Cummins and at Caterpillar. He came in, interviewed with the Porsche family, and after a few minutes of talking with them, he stopped them and he said, wait a minute, I'm an engineer from Caterpillar. I don't know anything about building sports cars. They said to him, we have people who know how to build sports cars. We need someone to work on our people and our culture and organize this place. And that's what he really excelled at. So that's how he became one of the best CEOs that Porsche ever had, really saved the company.
You're right, Andy. Some of the stories in the book is how he challenged his people. When you read his perspectives and point of views on his first day, his second day, and how he looked at his team and he challenged them, any business owner who could read those paragraphs, those chapters about this, has got to get excited about lifting themselves up and how you can go to your entire team and says, we got to get to new heights.
How many business books can you ever point to where you're reading it and you're getting excited as you're reading it? Like I was getting charged up just reading this book. So the point about culture, a willful violation of the culture must be dealt with promptly and firmly. Failure to do this will dilute and ultimately destroy the culture. And the little story that he tells was how he was a brilliant young engineer at Caterpillar. And however, being young and a bit immature, my conduct relating to others in the organization was often rough and insensitive. This was one of the aspects of this individual that we just had let go at our company. Exactly this. He got summoned up to the office of a vice president thinking he was going to get this glowing praise about what great, brilliant work he had done. And he got completely chewed out because of the way he was dealing with other people at the company. His work was fine. His quality of work was fine, but he was violating the culture of Caterpillar. And the vice president told him, if you continue to do this, you're going to be out on your butt. And he came away admonished and very surprised because, like I said, he walked up there thinking he was going to be getting all kinds of accolades. And it was just the opposite. But that's about the culture, about how important that is. And in our experience, our just recent experience was we thought was a superstar head technician on his way to becoming the foreman, really imparting years of experience and knowledge to our younger techs. He was just, it created a toxic work environment.
Let me stop you there for a minute. And if you've heard this before, just allow me one more time to tell the story about climate. Culture is climate. You're describing that to me. And it was a while back. And we were talking about culture on a show. And I heard climate is culture. And when I thought long and hard about it, I started to realize that you always look for a sunny or partly sunny day inside the business, and now you had a hurricane going on in Bay 4, which sounds like your description of the toxicity that that employee had. You can probably feel, see, hear, intuition, managed by walking around, which he brings up in this book, by the way, what's wrong with the company, what's wrong with the team, what's wrong with everything that's going on, because there's a rainstorm, a tornado, or a hurricane going on in the business. And maybe for a lot of our people in the industry, they could relate, even though they may not understand and appreciate culture and really what it all means, the values of the business. The toxicity of an employee who is not making it fun to come to work needs to be dealt with.
Absolutely. We had multiple meetings, sit-downs with this individual. The behavior just never changed. And we let it go on too long. As I said, we eventually did bite the bullet and do what needed to be done, but it didn't need to go on as long as it did.
Your people were waiting for you to pull the plug, and when they did, they celebrated.
Yeah, they did. And because we do have that kind of a culture at all three of our shops where, you know, when it's someone's birthday, we send a picture around. There's a text thread. Everyone in the company that the birthday pictures get sent around. We'll have lunch for them, you know, all that kind of stuff. But there's a real sharing of values, people enjoying to come into work, people enjoy working with each other. I always talk about our shop floor is almost silent. It's a very, very calm place. There's no one swearing at each other. There's no blaming each other and pointing fingers. And it had really changed. The blaming, the pointing of fingers, the not taking ownership, not taking responsibility. It was completely counterculture to what our business is.
You know, you are your business's Peter Schutz. You are, because you didn't know how to fix cars, yet you came into a business, purchased a business, and let it, and let the people do their work and hire the right people. And that's so much of this great story that Peter Schutz has. Get out of your people's way. Let them do what they do best.
Yeah, there's a great part of that coming up in the book. Yeah, we're going to hit on that exact topic.
One of them was treat ordinaries as royalty. That was something that stuck out for me. I really love that part.
What kind of a leader are you going to be in your business? And he compared it in the book. He compared it to a Native American tribe. He said, if you are leading by being the best warrior in the tribe, if that's what your leadership style is, you can do that, but you're going to spend a lot of your time taking on challenges from junior warriors who want to be the best warrior, right? So if you are the top mechanic in your shop, you're the owner, you're also the top technician in your shop, is that the best place to be? Or would it be better to have better technicians than you are, people who know more than you do? Or if you are the best guy on the phone, the best sales guy, and you are the owner, wouldn't it be nicer to have better salespeople than you? You don't need to be the strongest, the fastest, the expert in every field. If you build those people around you up, and then stand aside and let them get up on the podium. Let them lead in the areas that of their expertise.
They have no choice but to follow. And maybe they want to blossom. Maybe they want to grow. Maybe they want to learn to be the best. But you're the brick wall in their way.
Yeah. And do you want to be working on all the aspects of owning and leading a business at the same time where you're having to take on challenges from people who are trying to, who feel that they have to get up and past you? Or do you want to just step aside and let them hit the accelerator and speed their own careers, speed their own advancement, their own knowledge, their own expertise, and get better than you are at whatever that field is, whatever that expertise is?
There was a thing from the book, Satchel Paige, baseball player, I think Cleveland Indians. He said, never look back. Someone might be gaining on you. But as a leader in the business, truly, if you're trying to lead people, you don't want to keep looking back. You want those people to pass you.
For sure. I don't want to be the smartest guy in the room.
I think from a business perspective, in a competitive, I mean, global business, yeah, never look back because someone may be gaining on you because you have to set the tone of you and your own people. But as far as a leader internally, I would not want to be seeing who the hell is gaining on me if I was president, CEO, leader, COO. I'd want my people to say, you want my job? Come and get it, baby. Come on. Because then I can go other places and I could grow in the company and we could be a 10-store chain here because you want this job.
Absolutely. there was a great point about how you don't need a team of where everybody has to be above average, right? I mean, you can, by continuing to develop your people beyond your own ability, you're really reinforcing and making more valuable your entire operation. And then you're able to get out of the way, you're able to truly get out of the way and then do the things that you want to be doing.
You know, maybe part of this think here that someone can walk away with, you know, listen to learn just one thing. What's your bench like?
Yeah. You got to have a good bench, right?
Yeah. You got to have a bench for the service advisors. You got to have a bench for growing mechanical specialists, technology specialists. You've got to have a bench for all of that. Guy, I can imagine you've got Mercedes, Porsche, BMW specialists in the company, but you've got to have groomers.
Yeah. And they're always talking to each other and referencing each other for, I need to go to him for, you know, this particular, he really understands this subject. So there's a lot of cooperative interaction at our company from people hitting each other up for resources, knowledge resources, which is great.
A reality of doing business today is facing a technician shortage, and NAPA Auto Care has a free solution with the NAPA Auto Care Apprentice Program. The program was pioneered by one of our own, Pete McNeil, and Master Technician Jake Sorensen from McNeil's Auto Care in Sandy, Utah, and they realized that the problem of not having technicians available for hire was not going to solve itself and decided to take action. A focus was put on younger individuals with the right passion, desire, aptitude, and attitude to work in the automotive repair industry. Jake and Pete sought after these individuals and developed a technician apprentice program to give them the training needed to become a successful technician in today's world. The NAPA Auto Care Apprentice Program includes a comprehensive 9-stage curriculum that includes a variety of types of training, including exclusive in-depth classroom training videos, instructor-led NAPA Auto Tech classes, web-based Auto Tech e-learning courses, and practice skills with hands-on learning in the shop with the guidance of a mentor. The apprentice program curriculum is competency-based, meaning an apprentice can move through each stage at a pace that best suits them. Most apprentices complete the program within 2 years, and upon completion, apprentices will have earned 4 ASC certifications, G1, A4, A5, and AC certifications, adding industry validation to the skills an apprentice acquires. Apprentice graduates are also registered with the Department of Labor as Journey Worker Automotive Technicians. Having an apprentice in your shop will ultimately benefit your shop as they advance through the program. In most cases, as the apprentice develops their skill set producing billable hours, you'll see a growth in your gross profit by stage 5. One of the largest entry barriers for individuals looking to enter the automotive repair industry is the cost of tools. To keep your apprentice motivated, they receive an apprentice toolkit, including a 4-drawer tool cart for all registered apprentices. Together, NAPA Auto Care and your shop can fix the technician shortage. Start now, grow your own, and build your bench. Our future technicians can come from our concentrated efforts, and it's free. Contact your NAPA representative to learn more or log in to member.napaautocare.com or contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store's sales representative.
So many things are going through my mind, and we could do this. We could spend an hour and a half thinking about training and supporting and all that stuff, but I'm not going to because this book's got so much more in it. Again, thank you. Thank you.
This is actually something that happens a lot in a lot of shops, breaking down this barrier. Peter tells a story about when he was at Cummins Engine. They were seeing a customer who was having frequent trucks breaking down, and they did a study of the data, and they found that the majority of these breakdowns were within the first 10 miles of logistics center where the trucks were departing from in the morning. All these breakdowns were in the first 10 miles, and they were starting to look at it. So Peter went to visit this operation, and he saw that you had the truck drivers, and then you had the dispatchers. And the dispatchers were all behind a glass pane, like in another office. So the truck drivers would be standing out there and waiting to get their truck dispatched, and waiting. And the people behind the glass in the office, the dispatchers, were walking around. To the drivers, it seemed like they were dragging their heels, and that time is money for these drivers. So what would happen? The dispatcher would finally hand the ticket to the driver. The driver would go storm out to the truck, start the truck up cold, jam it into gear, take off down the road, jam it into second gear, jam it into third gear, and be messing up the transmissions, the clutches, and breaking trucks. He had them remove the glass pane between the dispatchers and the truckers.
I remember that part of the story.
The immediate thing that came to mind was your front office, your service advisors, and your techs. If there is a physical glass pane or a cultural glass pane in there between those two groups, you have unlimited opportunity for frustration and anger and misunderstanding and lack of or miscommunication. So he said, break down these barriers. He said, as soon as they removed this glass pane between the dispatchers and the truck drivers, all of a sudden, everyone needed to deal with each other face to face, and everyone had more respect for the other person. The dispatchers got going quicker. The truck drivers weren't angry. They weren't cooling their heels. I got to tell you, so this, for the older listeners, this may remind you of the sitcom Taxi with Louie, the dispatcher, right? And for the younger ones, it may remind you in Caddyshack of when Danny, the caddy, got behind the caddy master's cage for one time and started hassling the guy who wanted to buy a Coke. And then he got kicked out of the cage and then they had a big fight, right? So think about that in your operations, in your service advisors versus your shop floor. Is there any kind of a physical or a cultural barrier there that impedes them being able to communicate, being able to work together cooperatively, where it's not an antagonistic relationship, it's a symbiotic relationship? It just jumped off the page for me with service advisors and techs.
It's a brilliant analogy to take what he did at Cummings and take it into our shops. And sure, there's no doubt that there's probably glass doors because you're looking for quiet, heat, the whole thing. But it then goes back to, what's our policy on communications? What are we supposed to do as a front of shop, back of shop, to be a united force? And that goes to policy, goes back to systems, goes back to culture.
And, you know, one of the ways that we eliminate that physical barrier, if your tech has to leave the bay, obviously, he's not making money. So we want to keep the techs in the bays to be able to make the most money for the shop and for themselves. But we break down that barrier by using Slack, and everyone is on the Slack. So when these messages go back and forth, everybody goes, hey, is this part in? And they get an immediate response. And because it's just so efficient, it breaks down that communication barrier, and they don't feel like there's any kind of physical or cultural separation between their roles.
Yeah, today you got to use that electronic. I think Google Chat is like that. I don't know Google Chat. We use Slack in our company, and it is, wow. I call it texting on steroids because there's so many things you can do with it and how you can group and have different channels. You can send files back and forth, pictures. I mean, there's a lot of great things that a great piece of software like that can do to break barriers. Brilliant, brilliant, yeah.
And that's great because we also use it intershop. So we go three locations, they're all about 25 miles away from each other, and they Slack each other all the time.
I can imagine that if all of the technicians, even if you had a Mercedes channel or just a technician's channel, you could be communicating as directly as possible. Why flip someone a piece of a question who's a Porsche person and somebody's working on a Mercedes? So why not have different channels for different platforms, especially in a Euro shop? I can see that.
Yeah. It's really customizable. Yeah.
Wow. Cool. I love it, Andy. It's a couple of great principles. What else?
Okay. This principle of, it is difficult for the quality of any business to rise above the quality of its customers. And is this applicable in our business or what?
Oh, yeah.
How many instances of people dealing with, my customer doesn't want to pay our prices. My customer doesn't see the value in what we're doing. I get these people who only come in when they have a very difficult diagnostic repair. They always go to the Jiffy Lube for their oil change. All the gravy goes to the Quick Lube, and we only get, you know, the tough jobs. So, I mean, this directly addresses focusing on the quality of your customer and making sure that the quality of your customer meets or exceeds the quality of your shop. Because if they're a lower quality customer, and I'm not saying that's nothing cultural, it's just what do they value? Do they value the same things that you do? And the example that he gave, he was an advisor to a computer software company led by a group of young people as a startup. Frequently, he says, upon completion of the job, they would be informed that the system they had installed was not really what the customer had wanted, and they were expected to redo the system to meet revised specifications at no charge. It had become a major operating issue. And so he urged them to avoid doing business with customers who are not prepared to meet defined quality standards. They were writing software for companies that wanted to get a whole bunch of stuff for free because they would give them, okay, here's what we need. They would come with a software package, install it, and then the company would say, that's not really what we need. We now come in and do, you know, hours and hours of uncompensated work to get it up to what we need. We absolutely see this in our shops. And that kind of comes down, it's the rough way of saying it, you have to fire some customers. The more genteel way of saying it was, you need to vet your customers.
Yeah. Is this the kind of customer that we're going to enjoy a long-term loyalty quality relationship with? We're trying to reach out and find out about their family, right? Their recreation, the dreams they have, their occupation, the whole Ford thing from John to Julius, and have that relationship and build the trust that really makes them a customer that we want to have. And if they won't let you in, it's another great indication that they're not willing to let you do the repair to the degree that you know you need to do to keep the car safe and reliable. They're always looking for a shortcut, a deal, a discount, and you can't run your business on that. You just can't. But there's a lot of people that do, and they'll take that shortcut, and they'll do free enhancements, if you will, software, free enhancements for people. And they walk away saying, hey, we just had a $500 ticket and you hardly made any money on it because of everything you gave away.
And then we see these questions to other shop owners of, you know, how can I deal with this customer who is asking, being unreasonable or doesn't appreciate, or again, only brings us the tough jobs. And it's like, that customer is not for you. And you need to realize that. And we had spoken in a previous episode about this, about when I moved our main location of our shop in 2020, the one that was in the city of Chicago. And I downsized from one move to our new location. I downsized the shop particularly because the audience in Chicago that was willing to pay our rate for a quality repair where I could compensate our people properly was shrinking. So I wanted to concentrate on expanding in the suburbs. It's pretty kind of a tough thing to do, is to say, you know what, I'm going to shrink this location because the audience is shrinking. You know, sometimes that is what you have to do. The numbers just are not there of the people who are going to pay for your kind of service. So it's a decision. It was basically a decision of, are we really going to downgrade our service and become kind of move more down market and have a bigger audience? Or are we going to stay with doing things the way we want to do them, the way we believe is the right thing to do them, and adjust to what the size of the market was? And that's what we did. We adjusted to the size of the market.
Great move. Of course, you've expanded three locations now. You know, you've just done so many great things. You've got internal succession candidates, two additional partners with you. We did a great show at Apex. Oh, three additional. So you're doing some brilliant, brilliant stuff. And I think people should pay attention to what you're doing and get on our website and look at that stuff. Question about terminating or letting a customer go. Give me a recommendation on how to do it, to the point where you have to stop and think about which ones, and should we, and can we, and recommend someone, because it's been a pain in our side forever. But then, okay, pick straws. Who's going to do this?
I would say all of the people in our front offices are capable of doing it. We, you know, send them away with a hug.
Or you just don't have an appointment the next time they call. I mean, how's that work?
If it comes down to they're calling, they're insisting they want to come in, we just gently tell them, we don't feel that we are the shop for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we will recommend other shops in whatever area we happen to be in, whichever one of the three areas it is, that would suit them more. You know, I'm fine. We have a list of shops of all different, you know, we have muscle car shops, we have Italian specialty shops that we're glad to refer people to. I don't need to get every person out there, but I need to get the right people in the door. So I don't have any kind of a problem with saying, you know, we don't think we're the right shop for you. Here's a place that we suggest as an alternative to take your car.
Thank you for that little bit of lesson. Appreciate that.
If you do a good job vetting them the first time, there's less of that. You have to do less of dismissals. Just like interviewing for a job, right? They hire slow and fire fast. In this last case for us, we hired very, very slowly, but unfortunately, we also fired very slowly too. Same thing with your clients. You know, get to know them coming in and really get to understand if they're the clients for you.
So vetting them, I mean, is there a standard operating procedure? Brand new customer comes in, Are you looking for warning signs? I know this isn't having anything to do with the book, but I'm interested in Andy's perspective on vetting.
You can't immediately call it a red flag if the first thing or one of the primary things they ask is what your price is, because as we all know, most of the time they don't know what else to ask. If they are insistent on being focused on what your price is, that becomes a warning sign that they may not be for you. Even regardless of where in the price spectrum you are, if all they talk about is price, that's usually the quickest way.
So in the first 15 minutes, how much, they say three times, there's a warning sign.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to bring them to a conclusion. You're trying to explain to them what needs to be done. You haven't completed what you believe is the right overview of the work that needs to be done. And they keep saying how much. That's a vetting warning sign. Yeah.
And then also communicating the value of what we're doing.
And having them not care about that. Yeah.
Right. We're going to be there we warranty our stuff for 3 years. We're going to be there all the time. You pick up the phone. We get inquiries on the weekend. We're closed on the weekends. We get inquiries in the email box. We all monitor them and we'll shoot people a response on a Saturday night or a Sunday or something and just say, hey, we will talk to you on Monday morning. And people are very appreciative of that. It's really the things other than price that are in terms of the quality of what you're bringing, your service and product that you're bringing to the table. If that's really falling on deaf ears, it may be a sign that you don't have the right client there.
Got it. So thank you. It's a great strategy. The first half of the book, The Driving Force, Extraordinary Results with Ordinary People from Peter Schutz, former CEO of Porsche AG. I'm holding the book up again. And we'll make sure that that is on our books page. Our books page is going through a metamorphosis. We've had some link issues, but we're going to fix it and we'll put this book up there. But from my perspective, this is a book you got to read.
Yeah, it's great. It's very rare that I recommend a book. You know, I have a typical 30-second attention span, so I really needed a very engaging book to really hold my interest. So I've read all the popular business books. I have to say my biggest criticism, and far be it for me, I'm not a writer, but my biggest criticism with a lot of business books is they go in, they state these five principles or whatever, and then they spend another 200 pages just redundantly going through these principles. I'm like, I got it. You could have made this a pamphlet for me, you know?
Okay. Since I'm only a third of the way through, and have you read the whole thing?
Yes.
Okay. Typically, in any business book, to your point, you get almost 60, 65% through, and you could throw the last section away. For whatever reason, don't ask me why. This book's got to be 200 pages. I know you made the point in 120 pages, but it's got to be thicker. The size of books bring you the value of the content. BS, right? BS.
Yeah, I agree.
And someone told me one day, who's this voracious reader and brilliant, 10 times smarter than me, says, if you think you got out of the book what you wanted to, and you're fine with it, you're not happy with where it's going partway through it, close it up, call it quits, be done with it. You probably got the essence of the book that the author wanted you to get anyway. But what you're telling me is this thing goes on and on, huh?
The last 20 pages, I would say, are kind of the weakest, but there's 280 pages of really gold ideas in here.
I loved his stories. Didn't he go to work for Cummins too after Caterpillar?
Well, no, he was at Cummins first, and then he went from Cummins to Caterpillar, went from Caterpillar to Porsche.
That's right. There's some really cool stories. Oh my God.
The stories are really great, and they're so applicable. You know, you don't need to be a racing fan. You don't need to be a Porsche file or a Euro car driver.
A diesel truck driver. Yeah, I mean, you just don't.
Yeah, there are really applicable business lessons in this book.
Lessons, strategies. He got people to do things without manipulating them by just, I don't want to give some of the great stories away in the book because it's a fun read, by the way.
Yeah, it is a fun read. And I will say, so if you go on Amazon, this book's no longer in print. So if you go on Amazon, you're going to find it like $100, offered at $100. I do know the author, his daughter, Lori, and she has copies of the book. I will get you a link to her to put on your book page so that they can contact her directly and buy a book for $29.
Well, how about this? I will put it on the show notes page, okay? So that anybody who calls up this thing on their player or even on our website, the link to her will be there. That would be great because, yes, I can't remember how or when I got this book, but Yeah, it's 21 years old.
Yeah.
It's a classic. Thank you so much for bringing this to me. It reads well. You're hanging out with a corporate executive of a huge company we all know who's telling the real world. An engineer that became a leader of people.
Well, and I'll tell you another thing. So Brandon and I are going to an Echelon Front muster in Nashville at the beginning of May with Jocko Willink. And I am bringing him a copy of this book. That's how much value I place on this book.
And we did an episode, and I don't think I listed it here, but we did an episode on that. I remember you being at Apex with us, and you were doing push-ups, right? Was it push-ups?
Yeah, that was for the St. Jude's push-up challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, the St. Jude's thing. Yeah. Oh, my God. Andy, you're such a cool guy, man. I wish we lived closer. I would hang out and drink beers with you or something.
I would anytime. I'll see you at Apex. So I know that there's always Apex.
Yeah, for sure I will. Andy Bizzup, Midwest Performance Cars, Chicago, Northbrook, and Westmont, Illinois, brought us this great book, A Driving Force. Peter Schutz, I'm third of the way through. Andy read the whole thing. We both truly recommend it to you. You're going to pull a ton of great ideas. Hopefully, we've given you some, I mean, incredible pieces, slices of wisdom here on how to be a better leader. So, Andy, thanks a ton, my friend.
Thanks, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.